With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
A warm welcome from North Wales in the UK. And have I got a guest for you waiting in the wings, a guy that I watched in the early 90s when we used to get WCW Worldwide here in the UK. My guest for episode 174 is former WCW, WWE, ECW and TNA star. It's Mr. Eric Watts on Stu's Wrestling Podcast today. Thank you so, so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it so much. I got my words out there.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to be on the show for sure, man.
How was it breaking in? Now, I know, obviously, you were Bill Watts' son, famed wrestling promoter for Mid-South, and your dad wrestled and stuff like that. But how was it getting into the business? I know you played football collegiately prior to that. But, yeah, you're starting the business for the viewers and listeners.
Well, listen, I'll try to keep my answers as short as possible because we only have an hour. But in a nutshell, I was playing college football on scholarship here in America. I was a quarterback, 6'6", about 260 pounds in college. I was known as one of the bigger college quarterbacks. I had my eyes set on, when my mom and dad, when we were younger, they made a decision based on watching how the other families progressed in pro wrestling, from the Von Erichs to the Harts to the, Blackjack Mulligan and Barry Windham. And I could go on and on and on there. You know, there's so many, you know, Jake Roberts with his dad, Grizzly Smith, you know. So as we were watching Dusty Rhodes with Dustin Rhodes, as we were watching in the Ganyas, I could keep on mentioning, as we watch, my mother had explained to my father, because my mother is from Estonia. Okay. And so when she got to America, my father went into pro football out of college. He was a really good college football player, really good amateur wrestler. He left prior to getting his college degree. My mother, out of high school, went into modeling and never got her college degree. And so she sat down and she's like, "Hey, don't you think it would be best before any of our kids enter into the ring that they have a college degree, so that if something happens, an injury, or they don't like the business, or, you know, whatever, all the different reasons, they need something to fall back on." And back in the 80s and 90s, right, you know, your college degree meant a lot. It's not the same as today. I think college degrees mean a lot, but it's not the same as today. You can go online, you can get degrees, doctorates, masters, whatever you want. So I had my goals set on being, I want to be a Heisman Trophy winner, which is basically, it goes to the number one college football athlete in the nation each year. They give a Heisman Trophy. I wanted to win the Heisman. I wanted to win the national champion. I wanted to go to first round in the draft because I believe in setting your goals high. It didn't happen. I ended up playing my senior year, but I had a lot of interest in the pros, Tampa Bay, particularly Cincinnati Bengals, Dallas Cowboys. They were looking at me. But by the time I was going to go pro, I was going to go in one of the later rounds, like sixth rounds, which is more like a free agency. At that time, I had, I called my father and asked him if he knew anyone in Atlanta or around Louisville or Nashville where I could get in the ring for a bit just to test it out, because we put up the ring, we sold t-shirts, we did lights, camera, action, we drove wrestlers to the airports and back. We did everything you could in wrestling without getting in the ring. And I wanted to see what it was like to get in the ring. So he called up a buddy of his, Mask Assassin, Jody Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And his school ends up, the school I went to on South Georgia ended up becoming the power plant for WCW. But I didn't go when it had all that beautiful equipment and all that. It was in a warehouse. They had about three rings, no air conditioning. It was brutal. And so I went down there, and basically what ended up happening is I went out and trained there, and then I was going to go back to Louisville, finish my master's, and figure out what I wanted to do. And all of a sudden, a dream, Dusty asked me, hey, on your way back, why don't you hit a town and wrestle? And I freaked out. I'm like, what do you mean? I've been wrestling for like 21 days. Yeah, that's it. I don't even have it. You know, I went ahead and bought boots because out of respect, you know, I wasn't going to just throw on amateur shoes or basketball shoes. I went ahead and got boots in order to go down there and work out. But I had nothing. I was like, well, what do you want me to wear? And he goes, well, I don't know. Cut off some of your football pants or put on your letter jacket or whatever. So he worked it out to where Sarge, I don't know if you ever heard the stories.
I do. I know him well.
I call him the Chuckinator. He's always so mad, right? And he's just always so intense. So he was like Chucky and the Terminator had a baby, and I call him the Chuckinator. So I'm with that beast for 21, 22 days. So they worked it out to where I was going to have a match with them. Had a match in Franklin, Tennessee. Then Grizz asked me to call Dream. Dream said, hey, why don't you run it back the next day? You got till Monday to be up in Louisville for school. So I ran it back. And then as I was getting out of the ring, Grizz asked me to call Dusty. I called Dusty again. Dusty said, hey, let's run it one more time. I said, absolutely. Because the first night was a blur. It was just a blur. It just happened so fast. The adrenaline was pumping. Second night, slowed it down a little bit. Third night. And so Dream, when I got out, they said, Grizz said, hey, call Dream. He wants to talk to you. So I called him, and he's like, how did it feel? I said, Dusty, I said, I have in my life, I think that I've hit some huge platforms in which I have been in front of huge audiences. I mean, I played against Syracuse in football in the Tokyo Bowl in Tokyo, Japan. Been in the Fiesta Bowl championship against Alabama, one of the highest rated TV appearances ever. My first collegiate start was against Ohio State. And for the people there that don't know, Ohio State is a legendary, known for always selling out. It's called the Horseshoe. And so my first official start was on ESPN in a sold out Horseshoe, 100,000 plus people on ESPN. So I've been on some very big platforms. I've been very blessed. But I told Dusty, I said, in all my days, in all my thrills, in all the things that I've done thus far, I have never felt anything like I felt the adrenaline as I did in the ring. And people may think, okay, Madison Square Gardens or pay-per-view. No, the Franklin, Tennessee, I bet you there wasn't 4,000 people. Okay. You know, and then it was a smaller venue. And then the next night, I think we were probably in front of like another 4,000 or 5,000. The third night, I think we were probably in front of like 8,000 people. So it's not like it was a pay-per-view. It's not a TV. It's not a, but let me tell you, man, there's nothing like getting up in front of people and feeling their emotions and feeling their cheers and feeling their being mad and yelling and screaming. There's just nothing like it. And I told him, and Dusty said, "Brother, you are effed." And I go, "Excuse me?" He goes, "You're effed." He goes, "I wanted to ask you," he goes, "because that's exactly the way I felt. You're never going to feel like this ever again unless you don't wrestle." I said, "Well, sir, my plans are to go back to college. I only had 3 classes in the summer. I was going to, the semester to knock out my master's in business. I'd already got my degree in the first 3 years." And he said, "You're not going to need it. Tonight, drive back to Atlanta." I go, "Excuse me, sir." He goes, "Tomorrow, you sign your contract, and you're on Saturday Night Live Pro Wrestling WCW. And my head was just swimming. So I call my fiance and say, "Hey, you need to drive down. You're not going to believe this. I'm going to sign a contract on a pro wrestling." She's like, "What? I thought you were just going down to get in the ring and see." I said, "We're moving to Atlanta." So I could go. If we ever do another episode, man, I could tell you so many stories.
Yeah, definitely.
People don't even think what goes through your mind, right? Because WCW wasn't like WWE. WWE, they had fashion designers and people making your outfits and doing your ring music. Hell, I didn't even know what my ring music was going to be. I did not know what I was going to wear. So my fiance, she gets in the car and drives straight to Atlanta. She gets there. We're in a hotel room. And I'm looking at her going, "I don't even know what I'm wearing." And she's like, "What?" And I go, "I don't even know what I'm wearing out there." And then she's like, "Well, I've been watching some of the wrestling. You know, the guys, they shave. I go, "What?" You know, like I'm not. I said, "Okay, my arms." So I start with my arms, shaving my arms, right? You know, and then I'm looking. I'm like, "Okay, I can live with that." And then she's like, "Yeah, but, you know, what about your chest?" And I'm like, "Oh, no, I'm not shaving the hair on my..." Think about this. We are in a hotel room, and she's laughing. I'm crying, going, "I don't know." So then I shaved just my belly, which then looked horrible. So then I got to shave my chest. Well, when I do, she goes, "Raise up your arms." She goes, "You got to do your armpits, too." I'm like, "Oh, no. Guy, you know, are you kidding me right now?" So we're doing all these things and trying to figure out what I'm wearing. And I had my letter jacket because I didn't have my letter jacket with me. I had her bring my University of Louisville letter jacket because the Steiners, they came out with their Michigan jackets, you know, when they wrestled, right? So it was kind of Steiner-esque, you know, that college football, you know, thing. And so, you know, instead of us sitting there and having a few drinks and processing, "Are you really going to do this?" We're sitting there trying to figure out what the heck I'm going to wear in the ring. And it's kind of crazy because I only know the way I did it, but it happened so fast. So I even today look back and people will send me some of the matches that I had because I'm very brutal on myself. When you're a college athlete, high school, you know, standout athlete, all you do is film sessions and you critique yourself on your drop back or your pass or your tackling or whatever you're doing. You're reading the other defenses to learn how to beat those defenses, or when I was on defense as well in high school, how to beat the offense. So I was always used to looking at the film, but the coaches critiqued me, of course, but I was my hardest critic. And so when I first started, you know, I would videotape all my matches. And then when I was on the road, I'd watch the match. I even brought my own camcorder on the road to do it. Matter of fact, Diamond Dallas Page broke in about the same time I did. And he started doing the filming, too. And so I was tough on myself. But it took until 5-10 years out of wrestling for me to look back and go, "Hold on just a second. My first WCW match was the 24th time I'd ever climbed in a wrestling ring." Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, I would not even throw punches because I hadn't learned the art of throwing a punch, and I didn't want to accidentally knock someone out, break my hand, or nail someone. You know, punching, believe it or not, you see it. It's used so much. But a punch is probably one of the toughest things in the world to learn how to throw properly without injuring the other person and making it look decent. I mean, it really is. So that was It was full throttle, brother. It was one day I'm waking up, I'm thinking about going to play pro football. The next thing, okay, well, maybe I'll just check out, you know, what feels like in the ring. I'll finish my master's. You know, if I like what I do in the ring, I'll go to Atlanta, you know. And basically also Ted Turner was behind it too. Ted Turner had he was a big wrestling fan. Matter of fact, there was times in which Ted Turner and Jane Fonda, Jane Turner, you know, when they got married, they would show up in the back of some of the buildings to watch wrestling. Well, what a lot of people don't know is wrestling originally, when Ted bought it, Ted Turner bought wrestling because of the high TV ratings. And what he would do is he would air wrestling before the Atlanta Braves baseball games occasionally. So fans would watch wrestling, it would build up the fan base, and then they'd watch baseball. That's what his idea was. And so I remember one time I met him, and he was back in the back, go, "Mr. Turner, why don't you ever sit in the audience?" He goes, "My Braves baseball players would hate me if they saw me at a wrestling match because I'm missing the Braves game." And I just started laughing, right? But they brought in Dustin Rhodes, right? Dusty's son. Mm-hmm. They brought in Barry Windham, which some people don't know is Black Jack Mulligan's son. Mm-hmm. And so they had been there, and they were tagging, and they might have even been world champs, tag champs at that time, or getting close. Well, they kind of brought me in as the rookie to ride the road with them, and they did videos of them making me do squats and working out and getting in the ring and all that stuff. So the storyline was that we were doing this second generation wrestling. And you know, a lot of people were doing it about 5 years after we did it. But I think we were kind of the first on the block to start doing the generational wrestling. So, man, that's how it was. Before you know it, we're here and I'm on your podcast.
it's crazy, like, the length of time that certain guys have taken to get in there. And, you know, you were thrown into the frying pan, into the fire almost, weren't you, there? It's unheard of, really, when you think about it. You hadn't even made 30 matches, you know, and there you were in WCW.
Well, and the crazy thing is that it went so fast, and then the next thing you know, because I signed in, for some reason, I want to think that it had to be August, September, I think, is kind of when I signed and I started wrestling roughly. And then by the end of the year, next thing you know, they're having this press conference, and I'm being awarded by Pro Wrestling Illustrated Rookie of the Year. Right. So, I mean, Pro Wrestling Illustrated covers WWE, WCW. They cover everybody. And based on the voters, I was chosen as Pro Wrestling Illustrated Rookie of the Year. You know, I give Dallas Page a hard time because I think Dallas Page was runner up or second or third, So I told him, I said, "You might have won a whole bunch of world champions, but I was the Pro Wrestling Illustrated Rookie of the Year."
I tell you, I met him about eight years ago at WrestleCon. What a man. And I know you and him, great friends to this day. What a man. I know everyone says it. What a guy. He was so warm at that signing, you know. I've met various wrestlers over the years, gone over to the States to meet him. He was genuinely wanting to know about me. You know,
yes.
Just the way he is. Just, and you know him so well, and you've been friends for so many years, yeah.
You give me chill bumps because anytime, man, he's one of my closest friends, if not my closest friend. And what I love, like when I hang out with my friends, I love them happily married or have kids or, you know, whatever. I love them happy. That man is like the toys you used to wind up. And they just go, and then eventually they hit the wall and you rewind them up. That's what he is. From the time he wakes up till the time he goes to bed, he does not stop. And all he cares about is finding out about people, what can he do and how can he help them live a better life? You know, through like his DDPY.com when you hit it. And I use the program. It's a fantastic program. He just doesn't stop. And he does. He cares. He really cares about everybody and wants to help everybody. And where we had that bond, the bond was he was breaking in, and he was breaking into WCW at 38 years old. And I try to explain this to people. Yeah, he'd been a manager, right? He'd followed wrestling all the time. But he did not break into trying to become a pro wrestler till 38 years old. He won the, I think he won his first belt at 42, right? Or 41, 42, right? At WCW. So he's going to the school, and he came up to me one day and he goes, "Bro, how many days are you on the road?" And I said, I'm doing about 302 to 305 days a year. He goes, "But every time I come in here, many times that I'm at the school working out, I see you here." I said, "I don't miss a day. I got a key to the school." I said, "I don't have the time everyone else has. All these guys came out of high school or whatever, and they're wrestling and they're in independence. My goal is, just like in football, my goal was to be the biggest name in pro wrestling, right? To be in all the Hall of Fames. Because I believe that you've got to shoot high for your goals. If you achieve them, awesome. But one thing when I do in business, or when I talk to business owners, or I talk to salespeople, or I talk to whomever, I'm like, if you don't set your goals to the moon, like if you set the goal as I want to land on the moon, if you come short, you're up by the stars. But I know too many people in this world, their goal is to be at the treetops. Well, if you miss the damn treetops, don't make it. You're only 20, 30 feet up. I want to be thousands of feet up, right? So I always set my goals very, very high. And I told Dallas, I said, "How in the world can I be the greatest wrestler ever if I don't, I'm going to have to compact so much time into every year to be in the ring and to be," that was the one thing that a lot of people didn't get too.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I would go around the locker room and I would ask the guys, the vets, the Steamboats, the Austins, the Rick Rudes, the Bobby Eatons, the Ric Flairs. I would find someone and say, "Hey, would you mind watching my match tonight and tell me what you think?" Well, when I'm first starting, right, I'm one of the first one or two or three matches. And here I am, I'm asking Sting or the Steiners or Dr. Death Steve Williams. I'm asking these guys. Now, some of these guys knew me as a kid because a lot of them started at my father's federation. Those guys were easy. "Oh, yeah, sure, Eric, I'll check it out." But still, think about this. A Sting. Sting's got to do his face paint. He's got to do all his stuff. He's taking the time to walk out, watch my match. When I get back later on, intermission, whatever, he'd pull up and say, "This is what I saw. This is what I think you did good. This is what I think you need to work on." But then even people like the Harley Races, these guys would even take time that if I found out that the ring crew was going to have a ring set up by noon in a town, sometimes Harley would meet me at 11 o'clock or noon to go and do a workout with me so that no one knew, right? Because who's this kid at? Dude, it didn't matter. I did it in football. I do it in business. I'm going to ask people that I think that are the best of the business or know something that I don't know in order to better me, right? I mean, how do you become better if you're not always researching, studying, and training to be the better you? And you've got to find people. The tougher ones were like a Stone Cold. I didn't know him. A Rick Rude. I didn't know him. And I can go on and on and on and on. Bret Hart or, Undertaker or something like that. But I would ask, "Do you mind? Do you mind?" Well, think about it, man. If I'm on the road 305 days, let's take out TV and pay-per-views. That's 250, 260 days in which I'm asking someone, "Hey, do you mind watching my match?" Maybe I had nights in which someone didn't or couldn't or whatever. I got that. So, but man, it was always trying to. Dallas and I shared that. Mm-hmm. So when we went on the road, we'd partner up in cars and hotels and things like that, because he's watching his videos, I'm watching my videos, you know. And so, and we have kept that relationship to this day. You know, me and my girl just went with him and his wife, which Dallas, his schedule is so crazy, right? He was at WrestleMania, and I think now he's in Bora Bora with his wife for 7 days, you know, which that flight is like 23 hours, you know, connecting and all that for like 7 days and then back. So we were at Ron White's, I don't know if you ever heard Ron White, the comedian. Well, you know, we got invited to go watch Ron White. And so we're at Ron White. Before you know it, we're backstage and Jeff Foxworthy shows up and we're backstage talking to Ron White. Next thing you know, we're in the car, we're talking. And then and we might not see each other again for another month, you know, because he's busy and I'm busy. But we've kept that connection, and it means a lot to me when you say that you met him and that's how he is, because, man, that's how he is.
A line, you can imagine how long the line was that day, Eric. It was like, and I had a Macho Man shirt on because it was the year when Macho Man was being inducted. Well, we were off to the races then. As soon as he saw the Macho Man t-shirt, you know how much he respects Macho Man and what Macho Man did for him. We were off to the races. We were pals straight away. But yeah, incredible. What a man.
Yeah, do you remember? I remember, man, there was a lot of heat at WCW the one time. I think it was a pay-per-view in which Dallas had to run in on the pay-per-view. I think run in or he's in the match. And he had a chair shot on Mach. And I don't know whether the chair skipped his back or whatever and hit him in the head and split his head open. Mach. And I think Macho had just gotten there. And so Macho doesn't know Dallas and is like, hey, brother, you know, you got the chair shot, you know, take care of me. And then next thing I know, he's in the back. What the, you know. Oh, he was livid. You know, you could have killed me.
Thinking of a couple of years later and they were running the best matches of 97. Amazing. Eric, we've got a comment here from Matthew Rodriguez out of Spain. And it's going back to Sarge. Because you spoke about Sarge briefly when you were training. Memories of Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker, he wants to know.
Well, okay, so there's some funny ones, but there's a good one. So when Sarge was known, Sarge was brought up into pro wrestling the right way. A lot of people don't know. Way back in the day, there would be tryouts. And my dad, Stu Hart of the Lion's Den, Graham from Florida, Ganya, Von Erich. I mean, these promoters were known for their tryouts of beating the living heck out of people. Okay. So because they wanted everyone to go and know that pro wrestling was real. And so the bigger you were, many times the worse you got beat up, because the way they looked at it is, if they saw no talent in you and you were some 280-pound guy out of the gym, who better to beat to death? Because then he's going to be beat up, black-eyed, blown up in the gym every day going, man, that pro wrestling, that's horrible. That's tough, right? And so it was that mentality. A matter of fact, my dad almost went to prison because it took a while for a guy to come out of a coma, because my dad got frustrated with the tryout and he got in the ring and beat the guy so bad. The guy went into a coma. But Sarge was brought up that way of letting you know how real wrestling truly was. So I'm coming out of football and I'm already thinking to myself, am I going to a training camp? Plus I did amateur wrestling my whole life. I played basketball my whole life. So I already knew how to do the we call them Hindu squats, when, you know, you're just squatting. You know, you'll see a lot of your guys in Japan do it. I used to do it with a deck of cards. Every time you turn a card over, you did that many air squats, right? And you go through the whole deck to warm up before a match a lot of times. So, and you're going to do the push-ups and you're going to do the sit-ups and they're going to run you. So Sarge was known, and he had a decent amateur wrestling background. But nothing like my amateur wrestling background. I mean, I was raised, you know, I competed in wrestling forever. So I'm sitting there and guys are just dying and passing out and throwing up. Well, I kind of saw where this was going. So he would take the guys and he would just, for the first hour and a half, 2 hours, have you where you could, you know, your legs were jello. So I'm sitting there kind of working it like, oh man, with the other guys, I'm burning. Oh, I wasn't burning. Right. And so then he rolls the guys in, get in the ring. And then he wants to, you know, chain wrestle, amateur wrestle with them. And Sarge would take these big guys and just yell and scream, cross face them, maybe bust a lip, bloody nose, rub their face in the mat. I mean, have them in some kind of stretch move where they're screaming. And then so he's doing it. He's like, okay, Watts. And so I get in there. I'm like, oh, you know, acting. We tied up. I beat the living piss out of him. I put him in Moe's straight. He's like, because he didn't know my background. So as soon as we did that, he's like, brother, kayfabe. And so I saw his attitude. But we became very close very fast because he was so intense and he loves the business so much. And he looks at it like every person that he trains must understand the respect where wrestling came from, the heritage, the history, everything. So within 3 or 4 days that I'm there, not only is he working me out from early in the morning till late in the afternoon, evening, then we would leave and go to the gym and work out. So now it's me and him just one-on-one working out. And let me tell you, that guy, strong as an ox. So him and I got a rapport. Like I felt like he thought to himself, I am going to put as much effort into this person as I can for however many days I have. But realistically, he did that with everyone. And we became very tight so that when I signed to WCW, I think the first time or the second time I was off the road and in Atlanta, I think me, his wife, got to know his kid. I mean, we hung out. We hung out the very few times I was home, right? Because he was still training people and stuff. And then we went on the road. You know, a lot of times Sarge would be my opponent the first few trips we would be out, right? You know, as well. But he is known as a hammer. I mean, the guy is legit mad, upset, Chuckinator. Chucky in the Terminator. That's who he is, man.
I'm sure Matthew appreciates that answer of that question. We've also got Lewis Young, who was up in Scotland, up in Falkirk. He wrestles, he trains wrestling as well. What was your best match in WCW, you'd like to know, Eric?
Brother, man, I get asked best matches quite a bit, and I don't know how to answer it because I had so many matches there. I had so many matches there that are unforgettable to me for different reasons than what might mean something to you. There were times in which I would be in a match and I'm trying to process the fact that I cannot believe I am wrestling this person. I was a fan, meaning like I would be in the ring wrestling, trying to process the fact that I'm wrestling Rick Rude. I'm wrestling Ric Flair. I'm wrestling like the first time on the what was it called, the Battle Brawl or something like that at WCW. Yeah, the Rick Rude WCW when they did the lottery picks.
Yeah, yeah, like, I remember it. Yeah,
yeah, it was like me and Jushin Liger versus Sting and someone else. I'm like, I am actually in the ring wrestling with Sting. Those meant a lot. The Rick Rude at the time, we had a series of matches, the idea of the matches, and that meant a lot. Now, Rick Rude could not stand me. He hated me, but he didn't hate me because he didn't know me. He just hated my father. And so it made those matches very, 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 there was just a lot of intensity. He did not feel that he should be in the ring with someone like me, that I was too new, I was too green. I can 100% see what he's thinking. I mean, this guy has wrestled everybody, WWE, WCW, Kurt Hennig, and here he is with Eric Watts within, just a year into my wrestling, right? So I understand it. But how we then ended up getting to know each other and having respect for each other was amazing. Arn Anderson, I don't know if you remember the parking lot incident.
I do, obviously, not at the time, but I was watching WCW, but we didn't get Saturday Night over here. We got Worldwide, but yes, I have seen it after. Yeah, you know, more latterly.
People, I can't tell you to this day, people still ask me, was that a real fight in the parking lot? Literally. And if you ever have me on, mark that down too. I could tell you how that whole thing happened, mm-hmm. and it was amazing. Arn Anderson needed knee surgery. Arn Anderson gave an idea to Dusty Rhodes and my father. What if I have Eric take me out? Because I had the STF. He goes, what if he puts the STF on my knee that no one knows needs surgery? Hurts my knee. The surgery is only going to take me, you know, X number of like a month to get back from or whatever, or 2 months, whatever. But let's have it so intense that when I come back, I run the road with him and I'll kick his ass all the way around the road. We'll get huge numbers of audience members that want to watch this. And so, which I could not believe. So what it put me in is you've got one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, Arn Anderson, and one of the in top 10 in it doing interview promos. So now we have this huge parking lot fight. I put the STF on his knee. Police come. By the way, the police that were supposed to be there got caught up in traffic, couldn't get there, and real police came because the owner of the store actually called the police, ripped my ear open, put me in the car, lost my Fiesta Bowl ring, which we got back. I mean, they brutalized me, and I did not know that they weren't the police that knew what was going on. I'm like, you guys are serious. I'm sitting in the back of their car, my ears bleeding, stuff like that. But so imagine the fact that, A, that incident happened, and it was so tight, and the timing was so awesome. It got so much publicity. So now you've got Arn coming back. His knee is – he really had surgery on his knee. So it wasn't hard for him to be limping around, but then he's got all that time on the mic to tell people that he is going to dismantle me and crush me, right? On top of that, when he comes back, I've got a month and a half with this guy running around with one of the best. So I got thrown into a scenario that I did not necessarily deserve by one of the greatest. And now we're attached to the hip, hitting show after show after show, and I'm learning from the best in the business in the ring. So that whole time frame, or those matches, meant the world to me. You know, just as that pay per view, you know, I'm like, Sting, what are we doing? He goes, well, try to stay out of the ring as much as when I'm in there, so we don't have the babyface thing. You know, and I'm like, yes. I remember a match in which it was in a town. It was in a small town. There was a six man tag, and I'm trying to remember who it was. It was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, me, and I think maybe Shane Douglas versus Stone Cold, Fine Brian Pillman, and maybe Arn Anderson. And I'm sitting there on the side of the rope and almost forgot what was going on because I'm sitting there going, I am so watching the match. I was like, this is incredible. I'm like, you know, and I even think, you know, I said, Ricky, I can't wait to see you come off the top rope. And he's like, Eric, I do that every night. I go, I know, but I'm going to be at the ring, you know, So I hate to say it, there are so many great memories that I cannot pinpoint one match. I can't.
It's just so, yeah, I can only imagine. But the fan in you there, I love it. Because that's like the rest of us who've never set foot in the ring. You know, that's how I would feel. I'd just be in awe of it going on. That's amazing.
And that's what I tell people, and some of the wrestlers don't like this, right? Because you know what a mark is, right?
Of course.
Yeah, I just want to make sure, you know, if the listeners know, a mark is just they live and breathe whatever they're watching. You got marks in music, you got in acting, but you got them in pro wrestling, and they just wrestling is their life, and this is all they care about, and this is it. Well, so the thing about it is wrestlers are wrestlers and marks are marks, right? You know, like a mark is a super fan. So as a wrestler, you're not supposed to say I'm a mark, because you shouldn't mark out for other wrestlers because you're a wrestler. Okay. I say this in any interview. I'll say I was a pro wrestler and a mark. So I was a fan of pro wrestling. It's in my DNA. Pro wrestling was the way in which my dad bought all the groceries to feed us. And pro wrestling is what fed my children, right? It's in my DNA. It's what I know. And I am sitting here with the biggest stars and the biggest people on the biggest stages, Madison Square Garden, Boston Garden, Tokyo, Japan, Germany. I mean, just boom. And I'm just sitting here, pay-per-views. You know, pay-per-views at WWE, I'm like, man, I want one of those seats. You know, on the front row, I don't know if they still do it, on the front row of WrestleMania or SummerSlam or whatever their pay-per-views are, they make the chairs, and the chairs are memorabilia chairs. Mm-hmm. And those front row seats are expensive. Well, the people that I think that back when I was at WWE, the people that bought the front row, they also got like a VIP autograph session if they paid more. You could take your chair, and they would have a few of the guys, especially the main event, they could sign the chair. Then you take the chair home. You take the chair home with you, right? And I'm sitting there, you know, and before the, you know, we're there hours, 7 hours before pay-per-view. I'm walking around, looking at the chairs. I'm like, I want one of those chairs. And I didn't know, but I never asked for one. But we were doing a Canada tour. And one night, Brett came up to me and Jeff Jarrett. And he goes, hey, after the matches tonight, you want to head to my house and eat? You know, it's late as hell. We end up at his house, just so drunk. His wife's up making us steaks to eat, and we put on the TV and we're watching WrestleMania matches. I'm in Bret Hart's house with Jeff Jarrett and me in Canada, probably like 2 a.m, man. And guess what? I said, hey, Bret, that's the chairs like from WrestleMania. He goes, I got one forever. I said, can I sit in the chair and watch WrestleMania? So I was like marking out, man. And, you know, back then the phones, you know, the cameras were crap. I have no pictures of it or nothing like that. But I was just like, oh, my gosh. It was so amazing.
Brett is my favorite of all time, Eric. Still to this day, again, you know, he came from a family lineage, being in the business. You know, your time in WWF, WWE, what was the wisdom that Brett gave you? And I know Owen was very good with you too, with your time in WWF, WWE.
Yeah, so, again, amazing. I got Brett and Owen to meet me a few times at a ring to work out. And I'm going to tell you this. I had watched Brett many a times, but I was brand new to WWE. And I said, hey, is there a town where you go work out? And he's like, sure, kid, but here's the deal. Which I already knew this, but this is how much I love the guys that get it. Brett's like, don't come to me in the locker room. I mean, you know, as a rookie, I don't know if anyone knows this, but your first few years, as soon as you walk into a locker room, hey, Stu, Eric Watts, how you doing? Hey, Sting, how you doing? Hey, Goldberg, how you doing? You shake hands with the top of the top and introduce yourself, and then you go around and shake your hand anyway. If you're like the badasses, the Arn Andersons, and the, you know, so many of them. Not everybody, but there were some that they would go and shake every job guy's hand, right? Arn Anderson. Well, it's kind of funny because I might have been out the night before with whomever, and we might have had some drinks and laughing it up. The next day when we come in, I come in, Eric Watts, how you doing? You know, you introduce yourself, okay? So Brett was – but WCW, it was completely different. The locker room, the politics, and everything was completely different than WCW. So Brett had said, hey, do me a favor, you know, do your introduction, do your stuff, but don't come to me in the locker room because it's kind of a pecking order. and then it might look like you're trying to get favor, you know. I go, sir, no problem at all. So then we found a way for me to go work out. I'm going to tell you something. We were doing something and he had me throw him into the turnbuckle. He hit the turnbuckle so hard that the metal piece, because it's hooked and then it's cranked. Okay, with the metal piece, I put up many of them. He hit it so hard that it was able to almost unhook the piece, and then, so it would snap and then it would go boom. I mean, it was the loudest bang. He did it every time he hit the turnbuckles. I still to this day can't conceive the body damage. Because I'm 6'6". When I was at WWE, I was 6'6", 292. I went back and tried to do that 1,000 times. I couldn't make them. So I don't know whether it was my height or whatever. The way he attacked the turnbuckles. Mm-hmm. And Owen, like it was like dancing with him. He was so, I mean, like he was so smooth. Mm-hmm. But we didn't talk out. If some of the guys went for a drink at the hotel lobby or something like that, I did not sit and talk to Brett, and I did not sit there and talk to certain people. You wouldn't find me just hanging with Undertaker or something like that to mm-hmm. talk out of mm-hmm. the respect thing. The first while, but he took time to catch me in certain places and say stuff to me. Macho Man did the same thing. WCW, I can't remember. We were wrestling in Baltimore, I believe, and WWE was wrestling in Philly on the same night. Those are only like an hour and a half apart or an hour apart, right? The next day, believe it or not, the next night, WCW was wrestling in the same arena WWE wrestled in, and WWE was wrestling in the same arena WCW. Both shows sold out. Well, it was known that the guys at WWE would stay at this Marriott on the nights they wrestled that town because the other town was so short. So some of the guys said, hey, let's go stay at that Marriott and talk to some of the guys at WWE. And so sure, they had velvet ropes lined up to check in. They had an elevator for us so that people couldn't follow us, see where we're going. The place was packed from the outside where you pull up all through in. And then they were trying to keep all the fans out of the bar. And so when I walk in, as soon as I get there, there's Macho Man. And I came up to him. I said, excuse me, sir. My name's Eric Watts, just like you do in the back. And he goes, oh, brother, you sit down. Of course I know who you are, brother. And so I sit down and he breaks it down to me. He tells me a story about it. He goes, do you know that Macho Man would have never existed had your father not taken a chance on mm-hmm. me, right? And he tells mm-hmm. me the whole story, like the Road Warriors, like so many people, they're telling me the story, right? And Mach said, brother, here's my number. You need anything, you call me. And I said, yes. And I took his number and I put it in my phone. I never called him. The same thing with Bret Hart, the same thing, because I never found myself in a position. I mean, I found myself in a position many times because of the heat of who I was in second generation. But the way I was raised, I'm not calling anyone for any help. I'll deal with my own stuff in my own time. But those guys, if I need to pull them aside and ask them something about wrestling or would you watch my match and stuff like that, that's where the real thing came. But the crazy thing about it was, is there were certain people that you could have. When I met Macho Man, it's like we were family. When I met Bret Hart and Owen Hart, the handshake and the hug was like I hadn't seen my older brother in like 20 years. There was just that. Steve Dr. Death Williams, you know, he came to train at our house, you know. So there were a lot of those guys, the Fantastics, Michael Hayes, Terry Gordy. There was just a lot of those Sting. There was just a lot of those guys. One time I asked Sting, I said, hey, can we do a road trip sometime? And he's like, you know what? We probably can, but we got to be the last to leave the building because I don't want to see people you driving with me, and then you got to stay at a different hotel. I said, no problem. So literally, we'd wait. I'd act like I'm leaving. When he'd leave, I'd jump in his car. We'd go to the next town. I'd get a hotel somewhere. He'd get a hotel somewhere. We'd pick each other up because he didn't want any heat on me for, oh, so you're here now and you're riding with Sting. Well, I had nothing to do with that. Mm-hmm. I'd known Sting for years and years and years at Mid-South Sports and Universal Wrestling Federation with my father. And he was a person that he would – we talked about wrestling, but we talked about everything, you know, because, I mean, a lot of these guys, like the Fantastics, they would show up. Sometimes I would do, like, an indie show or they'd be on a show. They'd bring a football because they would tell people that the reason why I was so good at quarterback is because they would throw with me when I was a kid. I'm like, what? I don't even remember throwing a football with you guys when I was a kid. And I would laugh. But, man, they would show up. Hey, let's go outside, kid. And they'd throw the ball. And then they'd tell the guys, you see the arm on this guy? You see the – and I'm like, we're throwing football at you know, whatever place, you know. So it was really, really cool experience. And those guys – just taking the time to say, in your family, you need something, call. Your family, you need something, ask. And I think especially with your hardcore families, like Grizzlies and Ganyas and Grahams and Harts, and I think that they remember what it was like to be raised in those households in the 70s and 60s, 70s, and you know, whatever their age was in the 80s, and how intense it was as their fathers, as wrestlers or promoters, that they understood that there was no question of where our loyalty was at and how much we appreciated wrestling. There's a big difference between being a wrestler, tired on the road, and bitching about, God, you know, we got to wrestle the next night, or if that place isn't sold out, like, oh, you know, we're not sold out, you know, bitching and moaning. And there's a difference between that and knowing what it means to have it sold out, to, if it's not sold out, what can we do so the next time we're here to sell out? And WWE, the setup of WWE is different too, because the WWE guys, we got paid based on the dollar of tickets sold that night. So then you got paid depending on where you were on the card. Then you got paid more if you had a belt, right? You know, so if you're the first match, you're not getting paid with the second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth matches. So people didn't even understand, which was very awesome, because now you're jousting to get up the card, you're jousting to get a belt. It's competitive, and you dang sure want to see that it's sold out, because you don't know how much you're going to make. You just know it's better the higher on the card and it's sold out. So you go on a Europe tour and you find out that the Europe tour is already sold out for 10 days. You're like, I want to be on that tour, right? Because they may have two tours at one time. They may be doing Europe with one team and Canada with the next, right? And in Canada, the currency is horrible compared to the US dollar. So you wanted to be wrestling in Europe, right? Where that currency was better to the US dollar. Because I remember the first time I was in Canada, I got a check. I'm like, whoa, that's a great check. Until I had to take it to the bank. I had to pay to have the money converted. And then the conversion was horrible. I was like, oh, that sucks. You know? So there's a lot of dynamics that your listeners may not know was going on. But yeah, there's a lot to it. There's a lot to it. But the generational guys, it was just a different kind of communication, friendship, and understanding.
Amazing. Just because you're talking about being on the road and stuff like that, how was it for you personally? Did it grind you down mentally, or were you quite headstrong with it, being away from the family and stuff like that? I like to ask you guys, it differs from person to person. Your schedules are crazy. When you look what the guys are doing now, they're working a lot less. I'm not saying I like modern wrestling, but yeah, for you mentally, being on the road those 300 days, how was it for Eric Watts?
It's mind frame, right? It's how you think in your head, and you're exactly right. It's so different for everyone else. I'd be around guys at WCW because WCW, you got paid the same amount no matter what. Okay, so a schedule comes out, and guys would go, yes, you know, 14 days. Well, when I did my contract, I had a base contract, but I got bonused if I wrestled more than 23 matches. Every match over 20, something like that, 23, I think. So every match over that, I got an additional bonus. So I would grab my sheet because what I did was I took a little less money and then put the bonus in because when I was thinking and negotiating, I wanted as many days on the road as possible. So if we get a year into my contract, because contracts were every like 2 years, if you get a year into my contract and go, hey, what's the difference? What's the difference on the guys wrestling? Go, well, we can put Watts on here. Do it, brother. So, man, when I got my schedule, dude, if I saw 28 days, I'm like, yes, 28 days, man. I'm doing 28 days. And everyone else is like, you're happy about that? And I'm like, well, I'm happy because I get to train more, right? So the road was different depending on where you are in your career because, you know, some of the guys, you know, the road is tough and you're beat up and it would be nice to be home. I got that. I was never there. In my entire career, I was never at that because I was always trying to – how – wrestling, I call it – it's almost like method acting, right? And in theater, you know, doing Shakespeare is like the top of the echelon. So I use in a lot of my podcasts and stuff is that a great match or a wrestler, I call it they get to that Shakespeare. They're doing Shakespeare out there. You know, the guy that can call a match and change it up and do whatever he wants, blah, 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 blah. You know, the Shawn Michaels and the you know, we can go down the Ric Flairs, the Steamboats. They're just calling it out there. They're not setting up anything in the back. It's Shakespeare, man. They can control the crowd. They control the vibe. How do you learn how to do that kind of acting when you're just now starting? I was like 23 years old. I got to catch up because if I want to be able to do Shakespeare in my 30s and 40s and 50s, brother, I got to do the time. I'm not going to learn this in a school. I'm not going to learn it by doing 10 days, 12 days, 14 days. I'm just not going to learn it. So all the heat but when the kayfabe sheets, the dirt sheets in America, when they turned on me because the second generation and nepotism and all that bull crap, I had that. I had guys in the locker room like, oh, my God, you know, here he is. When I got to WCW, Dustin Rhodes came up and gave me the biggest hug. And I thought Dustin gave me the biggest hug because when we were kids, occasionally his dad would be in my dad's territory and we'd run into each other sometimes in the summer. So I thought he's giving me a big hug. He goes, Eric, I'm glad that you came. I'm so glad you're here. I'm like, bro, I'm glad to be here too. He goes, no, you don't understand. I go, yeah, I haven't seen you in forever. He goes, no. He goes, now everyone's going to hate you instead of hating me.
Oh, I'm like, no.
Yeah, no, yeah. No. Because Dustin, and Dustin, I think, is one of the greatest wrestlers too in business, man. He's up there, man. His work and he's still going. I mean, this kid's still going.
Unbelievable what
he's so good in the ring.
Yeah.
So good in the ring. But so think about this. He was catching so much crap by all the other guys because he was second generation. So take the heat from the kayfabe sheets, take all the heat I was getting in the locker room, all that heat, and what I used to think. Especially with the boys that wanted to hate me just because of who I was, I didn't even let that upset me. I felt bad for them because what I thought was, you hate me without even knowing me. You're just going along with a crew of people. And here's the difference. I'm here for the long run. I want to be the best in the business. I don't even know if you're going to still be around when I'm done. That was my attitude. I don't have time for it. I'm sorry that you, not sorry, like I hated that you didn't get to know me. I had people hating me so bad that they'd never met me. Man, meet me and hate me. I'll give you reasons. I'm not the perfect person. Mm-hmm. Okay. So to me, the trajectory was, yes, it was completely different. In football, you have one big football game on Saturday. and you've got Sunday, Monday, most of the time you're rehabbing, ice, you know, a light jog on Monday, Tuesday you hit a practice, Wednesday you're on a hard practice, you're leveling off Thursday, Friday you're doing a walkthrough, and Saturday you have 7 days in between the game to get over a nick and a scratch. Bro, you don't have a second. And the thing that sucks is you get hurt driving in cars that are too, you know, that cumbersome, in a plane, in of this. So you're not being able to ice like you can or stretch it out. And you break something, you tear something. If you want to keep on getting paid at WCW, maybe. But here's the problem people don't understand. Get hurt bad enough that you truly need 3 weeks off. And if you need 3 weeks off and the writer fills someone in for you and that storyline takes off, where are you? So you could lose your storyline. You could be, you could take that 3 weeks off or 3 months off, and you might be off for another year. You know, I mean, you see it all the time in today's world. Someone hurts a neck, a shoulder, and all of a sudden it's like, well, we're postponing them coming back. We're giving them more time for their injury. No, whoever filled their spot is doing well enough. You're trying to find a way to work them back in. So to me, the road was brutal because you had no downtime. And then, but it wasn't as brutal. I mean, it was brutal for a different, it was brutal, but I wanted brutal. In the military here, in the military, my daughter's graduating here next month from the Naval Academy. She'll be an officer. She's done 4 years at the Naval Academy, standout athlete, but she'll come out as a lieutenant, an officer out of the Naval Academy. And that academy is brutal. And one of the sayings they have in the military, this is the saying, embrace the suck. So things suck so bad, don't hate it, hug it, because it's going to suck all the time because you signed up for it. So that's kind of, and I never knew that military term. That's kind of how I looked at it. Like, the road's bad, the heat's bad from the boys, the heat's bad from this, but I'm embracing it because big picture, I am trying to do something for history. I mean, I want to set the stage. I want to be in the Hall of Fames, you know?
Well done to your daughter, Eric. I bet you're so proud of her.
Yeah, it's insane. And I wish there was more I could tell you about it, but
no, of course.
But I'm saying that not just that. Yeah. Put it this way, the military made a decision last month that no athletes out of any of their academies could go pro. So for a while, they were letting kids that could go to the NBA or the NFL or the baseball or something, they would let them postpone their five-year commitment. So my daughter went 4 years. For that 4 years in the military, she has to give them 5 years of service. Mm-hmm. Okay. And she's been chosen to be in the Marine Corps, which is top notch. That's what she wants. Well, there was she had the opportunity it looked like she was going to go to WWE to wrestle. Mm-hmm. And but the military, with all the things that are going on right now in the world, have decided to keep all, because all these kids that are coming out of these institutions are going to be officers. And right now, with how crazy things are in Ukraine and all this other stuff, they're keeping everybody in the service, right? So it was kind of crazy because it was touch and go. And I'm sitting there watching my daughter. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't even know if I want my daughter in pro wrestling. You know, I'm getting old enough that I want to see grandbabies and grandkids. But let me tell you what, this girl, she's a machine. She's a 6'1 model. But I would rather be in a fight with Conor McGregor than my daughter. she is a tough cookie.
Well done to it. Well done. I know, I can just tell how immensely proud you are. It's amazing. My boy's two. Well, he'd be two in July. My little boy would be two. So he'll have confidence, Eric, because I didn't have confidence as a kid. So I'm going to instill that, and I want him to do well. So
enjoy every day. Every day. People, you know, when my kids got two. I have two beautiful kids. My son's a model looking kid, smart, came out of business school. He's about 6'4", you know, big kid. I mean, not kid. He's like that model look, you know, the abs and the lean and all this other stuff. And people say, oh, my gosh, that's a terrible twos. There was not a terrible twos, not a terrible day. And I don't regret any of it because the way my mom raised me is I embraced and enjoyed every day, no matter what was going on with them or not. Because, man, here it is. My daughter's graduated. My son's graduated 3 years ago. And that is the – every time I see her, she's still that little baby or two-year-old or five-year-old or 10-year-old. So make sure you take every day and enjoy it, man, because they grow up fast and you say that. But until you advance to my age, you don't look back and go, wow, that was fast. You know, all grew up fast.
Yeah, live every day, isn't it? Eric, because of time constraints and stuff like that, I'm going to get you back on later on in the year. I know we'll get it done because I want to talk to you about TNA at ECW, which predated TNA as well. Yeah. But I'm mindful of the time and I know the viewers and listeners want to hear about that. But I'm thinking later on in the year, I will get you back on. We'll get our schedules together. Yeah. And I will get you back on because I've been under the learning tree for the last hour. It's been amazing hearing about your career and what you've done and mindset and things like that and positive, and just head on, doing stuff head on and just amazing. Thank you so much for coming on.
And let me take 1 second and tell the fans of yours, I appreciate what you do and coming from a pro wrestling family. One thing, you know, I get a million podcast requests, you know, and I don't do them all. I can't do them all because I've got, you know, a lot going on, but I make sure that I take time to do podcasts because I'm telling you in today's world, Stu, you and podcasters are so important to this because you take people back to see history. You know, some podcasts are based on today's wrestling and some are yesteryears. Mm-hmm. Some do both. So it doesn't matter, man. My mom, my dad, we all understand this, is that keeping wrestling alive, keeping wrestling entertaining is education and always talking about it, right? You know, in America, we used to have this Barnabas Bailey's Circus. And you're always excited about the circus coming in town. You're always excited about the circus coming. And the Harlem Globetrotters. Hey, the Harlem Globetrotters, the basketball team is coming down. But, you know, you never hear about it anymore. You never see it anymore. And you hardly – I don't even know if there is a circus. You know, Cirque du Soleil, but there's not a circus. And the Harlem Globetrotters. It's because out of sight, out of mind, and it's people like you that give back to people like us by continually planting the seed to the generations to continue to keep them up to date with pro wrestling. And so you guys are just as important as a Raw show or a pay-per-view and all that. Mm-hmm. So thank you for doing what you do. And brother, I've had so much fun on this. I will look forward to your communication. I will look forward to being back on, brother.
Because I know you're busy with business and all that stuff. So I appreciate the hour. But yeah, I'll be back in touch with you later on in the year. We will talk TNA because I know there's just so much with Russo, Jarrett. You getting on the mic like you did. Can't wait. And then obviously working for Paul in ECW as well. The great Paul Heyman, who has just gone in the Hall of Fame. What a speech that was, I tell you. But yeah, my guest today, former WCW, WWE, ECW, and TNA wrestler, former college footballer for the Louisville Cardinals. It is Mr. Eric Watts, my guest for episode 174 of Stu's Wrestling Podcast today. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Podcast Network.